Welcome to episode 21 of the ReWrap Podcast, where we talk about all things photo, video, and creative lifestyle. My name is Jaron Schneider, and joining me, as always, is Kara Minder, the man who is probably the best portrait photographer in the Bay Area. I say that far too often.
You only know me.
And our special guest this week is our favorite do-it-all photographer time-lapser, walking Rolodex. That is David J. Crew. I'm not going to re-say that one, even though I could. I'm going to go ahead and let that one roll out because there were too many syllables in it, because that's just how good David is at just about everything.
I want to say he is the
Flattery
David
will get you
J.
everywhere.
Crew. The yes. David J. Crew. He needs a the. He's a brand. He's a living legend.
So we got David here because we have a few things on our list of stuff to talk about this week that is relevant to what he's working on, and we kind of wanted to get his input on some stuff. But before we get to that, there's a couple bits of news to go over, and that is, as of today, it is available. Resource Magazine's summer issue will be out and in stores near you. If you've been subscribing to it, you'll get it in the mail shortly, but it'll also be in Barnes & Noble.
Wow. Barnes & Noble.
I cannot talk today. Barnes & Noble.
And you make fun of my enunciation.
Yeah, this seriously, I'm just the worst. So this issue is focused on rock and roll, and since the inception of rock and roll, the genre has perpetually evolved. Musically, we saw the rockabilly of the 1950s develop into the psychedelic wave of the 60s. The 70s and 80s, some of the most influential classic rock bands enveloped American culture. And in the 90s, brought grunge and much heavier, sludgy sound. And today, we've witnessed the rise of indie rock. Yet there is no distinct sound. Rock music is a part of a multitude of subgenres, from electronic music to noise punk. And in this, we have a lot of stuff, a lot of great photographs of some musicians from New York and the area, as well as good articles on sound and capturing music through imagery, and some great stories from various bands from around the world. So if you're interested in that, you should definitely pick that up. I can't think of a reason why you wouldn't want any issue of Resource Magazine ever, but this one in particular looks like it's going to be pretty good. All right, the next thing on the list is, we talked about it last week, and I honestly had no idea last week that it was going to be this soon, but Affinity Photo officially launched, like, I want to say it was 2 or 3 days after we recorded the last episode, and I'm pretty excited about it. I'm reviewing it right now along, again, with Prateek Nayak, who is going through all of its features and giving it the rundown.
Yeah, you can buy this in the App Store.
It's only on Macs, yeah. So you got to go to the Mac App Store and pull it. But the thing is, it's like $50. I think the special launch price until the 23rd is like $40. And Affinity basically, Serif, the company who makes Affinity, they told me that they plan on having this version last about 2 years. So $40 for 2 years of editing software. And through my testing, it's about as fast as Photoshop. You just have to get used to where everything is now, like different locations were. But all your shortcuts are basically the same. Layers and all that stuff works basically the same. And something that I'm happy to hear is they seem to have made changes, and they told me they were going to do this, but I found one specific instance is if you go to RAW and you change the color temperature in the beta, color temperature was like a percentage, which was super weird. Like you would change it up or down a percentage to get like blue or yellow. Yeah, David's making a face at me because he's like, that doesn't sound good at all, and Caramon is just being weird. Now it's actually Kelvin, so they actually heard one of our major complaints and was like, okay, cool. We're not going to do that anymore. We'll make it Kelvin, so it works. But if you're wondering some stuff about this, it opens Photoshop files, so you can open PSDs in it. It has full 16-bit color channel editing. It works with all the standard formats you're used to, PNG, TIFF, JPEG, GIF, SVGs, EPS, PDFs, that sort of thing. And it has basically everything that you've come to expect out of major editing platforms.
All for $40.
All for $40.
Yeah, that looks pretty incredible.
They also have a design app too, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, Serif has like an InDesign app.
Yeah.
What were you saying?
I just watched the intro video today, and I was pretty impressed with it. And the one thing I really wanted to see was just how fast it renders, the various plugins and filters using the higher end formats, like the D800 files, the Capture One files, things like that. That's been my biggest frustration with some of the computers in Photoshop. Has been just how long it takes for these things to render with the D800 and large format files. And I'd love to see how this guy handles it.
I dropped in a DNG that I shot on a Pentax medium format, the 645Z, yeah. And the processing time from reading the raw file and converting it into like an editable mm-hmm. JPEG inside of Photoshop, in both Photoshop and in Affinity, was pretty much the same. Ooh. They took about the same amount of time to do it. What's interesting is how the raw engine works differently on each. Mm-hmm. The exact same photo with no adjustments made to the DNG looks different in both Affinity and Photoshop, and it's like substantially different.
Oh, wow.
And it's not bad different, but it looks like the highlights are definitely more noticeable in Affinity than they are in Photoshop.
Okay.
So that's something that I know Pratik is definitely going to go into a lot more detail on, and we'll probably hear from him in the next week to 2 weeks as he completes his process with it. But as far as I'm concerned, like right now, it's already a viable platform, especially since it can open PSDs, and I bet it can save files that Photoshop can open. So there's no real reason that you shouldn't start using it if you don't have Photoshop now and you need an editing platform. Mm-hmm. You can absolutely go to this and not feel held back by anything.
Yeah, this Mac App Store, they have 146 five-star... Well, there's five... They have 146 reviews. They have a total of a five-star rating. They have 127 five-stars.
Jesus.
And like titles like Adobe Needs to Be Worried, Photoshop is now old school, this is the new tool.
Wow.
Amazingly rich pro features for a surprisingly low price.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. And something else that's kind of cool. I don't know how easy this is to do in Photoshop. I've never actually tried. But like, you can completely change the interface to fit exactly what you want it to do. Like, it has a totally fully customizable UI.
Do they call that personas, Jaren? Personas?
I don't know. Do they?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the $40 price point is actually 20% off until the 23rd of July, which I believe is in a few days. And the same thing for the Affinity Designer app, too. They're both... by the way, the previous Affinity app that came out is an editor's choice in the Mac App Store. So it's got some clout. It's got some legit behind it.
Yeah, they're a cool company. And what I also like is that the euro and the dollar, they're the same in both. Like, it costs 50 euros, it costs 50 US dollars, it costs 40 pounds. So
yeah,
like,
but
it's
in Greece,
all
it costs
it.
A lot more than that. It costs them the dignity.
That's not a depression joke. Yeah. Anyway, so there's that. We'll give you more information on Affinity when we have it. I'm going to definitely defer to my boy Pratik because he's so much more knowledgeable on this stuff than I am. But we'll have definitely something for you guys to check out soon. So, finally, Cameron, you take over this one. Is this big
yes.
news?
So I've saw this on Petapixel earlier today, and it's a peek into the intense workouts of a top adventure photographer. And the reason why I actually wanted to talk about this more is like, it's basically, this is covering... renowned photographer Jimmy Chin, and it's actually, I believe it's a North Face video, so North Face yep. sponsored, and you know, just showing like his exercise routines of how he keeps up and hangs with doing adventure photography, following these guys or on glaciers and hiking in the snow and keeping up with them and getting great shots. And I guess the point I wanted to make with this is just an example of like, yeah, you can be technically proficient and excellent with your camera, but it's what else you bring to the table that'll separate you from other people. Like, and so in this case, it's this guy's using his body as part of the tool to get the job done, and being able to even get to where the job needs to even be done in the first place. So, you know, it's what we all bring to photography before. Photography is just a medium. It's like, I don't know, it's like writing, where you write, but you got to put yourself in it, and you got to create. You got to make something out of nothing, and it's just a medium. So learning how to use your pen better won't make you a better writer. I'm saying, you know, pen better is like a camera.
I get it. So what you're saying is, as a you're drawing like a writer needs to be like better with his brain, and you're saying a photographer
better
might
with
need
his
to
life.
Be better with it. Okay. Well, I can sort of relate to this because recently I've noticed that my body is incapable of keeping up with some of the stuff that I need to do. Like, specifically running a gimbal is particularly challenging and difficult on very specific parts of your body.
I'm going to guess your
taxed.
Core.
My core and my forearms get really, really taxed when I'm using that. And I find myself getting like really sweaty pretty quickly, even in like cold environments, because my body is like chugging to keep this thing steady and at a certain height. And it's not at a natural height where you want it either. Like, your arms are raised at just a slightly uncomfortable point, so you can't like lock your shoulders or elbows in. So maybe I need to get into better shape. And by maybe, I mean I definitely
you do.
Yeah.
Your girlfriend will thank you.
Yeah, I mean, she will. Yeah.
Fiance.
So actually, I do. She is my fiance. I want to come back to this because let's skip to one upgraded. More story before we go back and talk some more about travel and that sort of thing, because that's where I want to focus the meat of this this particular podcast.
Yes.
But today I actually found a story thanks to Tam. Actually, Tam, our guest from last week, he put a story together that was like it was both a Wired and Fast Company article
and Engadget too.
Everybody. Maybe it was Engadget, not Wired. I'm sure Wired covered it, though. That a source had said that there was a 90% fall off in purchasing Apple iWatches. Therefore, they are failing.
Yep. And that source, remember, always look at the source, was a place called Slice Digital. And so I had already heard a lot about this. Like, okay, first of all, Apple hasn't released numbers, right? So they haven't said...
And they said they weren't going to release numbers before they released the watch. It's like, we're not going to do that.
They said that. So whether it is a success or a failure, I keep seeing more and more in the wild. I see more people wearing it. My trainer's now wearing one. He just got one, I think, last week. So I think you can even go into the store now and get them or get them in less than a week. But let's go back to the story where Slice Digital basically is a – what is he? They make money by selling their services to client companies. They track new business by sending out press releases that become quote-unquote news. The more shocking the story, the more PR they get, and in theory, the more new clients they can reel in. So they make their business on, say, shock news. And so, oh, Apple Watch is a failure. And they're, you know, that's kind of what they've done. And they've done, looks like it quite well because it went kind of viral, that story. And the story that we're linking to here is basically just saying, you know, look at the source. Like, you know, have some common sense. Know when, you know, Jeremy, remember when cigarette companies used to pay for their own, like, research findings and be like, yeah, smoking does not cause cancer and smoking actually makes you have a great life. And it was sponsored by the Tobacco Commission.
Yeah.
Right?
That still happens to this day.
Yeah. And this is just another example of that.
Like, remember I don't know if you guys watched much television, but there was a there's an advertisement that went around that was like the corn industry was trying to push corn syrup as like sugar is sugar, it doesn't matter where sugar it comes from, like there doesn't, you can have corn syrup in the same volume, you can have regular sugar, it's not any better or worse for you.
Sponsored by the corn industry.
Exactly, and it was sponsored by the corn industry, of course, because the corn industry is under extreme criticism because of corn syrup. It's really bad for you. High fructose corn syrup, your body doesn't process that as well as real sugar, and I don't care what they say. But they were putting out this kind of thing, this PR bust. And on top of that, here's another one. You guys, I don't know if the Caraminder is going to know this because it's PG&E. You're very familiar with PG&E. But if you're not in the West Coast, PG&E is called Pacific Gas and Electric. And what was it, 7 years ago? One of their old pipes in San Bruno
burst.
That they did not upkeep because they were cheap. That's basically what it came down to. It exploded and destroyed an entire neighborhood, killed multiple people. And eventually PG&E was fined, I think it was over $1 billion in damages for what they did. Of course, I mean, that makes absolute sense. But since then, PG&E has tried to whittle away at that and to get their public sympathy on their side. And they've released a series of heartfelt shot in slow motion videos and nice bright examples of like people who work at PG&E being like local to the area, being like, I care about stuff. And last night I was actually
reminded of the South Park BP apology videos.
Yeah, that exactly. It's like that, but real.
Oh.
It's actually happening. My fiance last night was watching one, and there was like this guy talking about how much he loves Oakland. And she ended it as soon as it like went to black, and it was before the next commercial hit. She's like, so that's why we won't blow up your neighborhood. Like that sort of thing. That's basically what they're saying. And so it's these PR stunts that do that. I don't even know how I got off on this tangent.
Oh, about studies that are paid for by
fake the studies.
Yeah, fake studies.
Yeah, so it's fake studies / PR moves are basically the same thing.
And nowadays on the internet, I mean, this reminds me a lot of, Jerry, you remember Ryan Holiday? And he had a book called Trust Me, I'm Lying.
Yeah.
Oh, And this reeks. He says check the source.
Oh, yeah, this reeks of all of that where it's like, okay, this company published a press release. And then you have organizations like Fast Company, Engadget. What was the other one you mentioned? They're all taking this as
everybody
fact.
Did it.
Yeah, they're all taking this as fact because it's a press release. And so they're reporting on it, where actually kind of looks like the real journalism, people who actually did follow up, let's say the Motley Fool, Forbes, and even Fox News. God, they actually followed up. Can't believe it. Yeah. So, you know, there's
because it's a corporation and they protect corporations. That's why.
Probably. And, you know, there's no qualifications on the internet for what is or isn't true that, you know, before someone hits the publish button in their WordPress blog. So just, you know, little grain of salt if it sounds a little too, hey, by the way, Jaren, for your, getting in fit, I know this one secret trick that will help you lose all that weight.
Great. Yeah. I'll click on that.
Okay. Yeah. Good.
So anyway, this is the one section of this article that we'll link to in the show notes is, given that only iPhone users can use an Apple Watch, Slice doesn't reveal how many of the 2.5 million are iPhone users, this 2.5 million people that they have set up as their polling group, or how they recruit people in general. And if a large number of this finite group bought a watch during launch week, it stands to reason there would be far fewer qualified buyers 3 months later. So Slice's 90% drop-off could be perfectly accurate and perfectly meaningless.
Should we also qualify how they got that 2.5 million number, which is by scanning emails for receipts from Apple?
Yeah.
Which...
Yeah, so it's like almost like a Nielsen household where they usually have a box on top of their television, except this is like software that runs on volunteers' inbox, I guess, from 2.5 million of them who've granted permission. I don't know. I don't believe 2.5 million people will grant permission. Hey, you go ahead and read through my email for marketing survey purposes.
Exactly.
Sure. Go ahead.
This actually, this reminds me of an article I read a couple weeks ago where the title of it is, I Fooled Millions Into Thinking Chocolate Helps Weight Loss, Here's How. And he explains how he made up a completely believable survey where he did a quote-unquote medical exam on some people. Like, they went through a whole process of, like, whatever. He created a fake foundation. And what happened was he managed to create this idea that chocolate helps you lose weight. And his results weren't not true. They were just with such a small sample size that he could have gotten any result out of it that he wanted to. And he found that, you know, out of the 20 people he had in the sample size, the 10 that ate chocolate while the other 10 did not, they may have lost a little bit of weight. And so he published this. And it went everywhere. Everywhere. It was in magazines. It was like in Cosmo. It was in HuffPo. It was all over the place. Like, everyone covered this. And then he came out and said that basically this is the problem. The same one we're running into here is that people don't check sources. They only see this little tidbit. And what he found was they published a press release similar to what we've seen here. And in that press release, he found that almost everyone who wrote about this pulled almost all of their information directly from the press release and didn't even bother following up on more of it.
It sounds like
they just took identical.
It also sounds like the same, or you could have done where somebody edits a Wikipedia article, then links to the Wikipedia article saying, hey, look, it's in Wikipedia, and even though they were the one that edited it, and saying, look, it's legit because it's on the Wikipedia, and then somebody else writes about it, and then they re-edit the Wikipedia entry so that way now the new person that wrote about it is now the source of what they just said on Wikipedia, and it's kind of a vicious cycle. And
I think that's called a circular reference. Yes. And if you're in Excel says no, not allowed. Yeah. Circular reference.
That's exactly what it is. And I learned that from the Ryan Holiday book, Trust Me, I Am Lying.
So what this is basically saying is, and the reason we brought this up is because Karaminder is very much fond of his Apple Watch.
It's actually, no joke, Jaren, it is actually helped me lose weight. So
there's that. He got very excited, as you can tell. What I was going to say was, what if Karaminder was in that 2.5 million people who that this company had sought, and so he already owned an Apple Watch? Why would he go buy another one? So he would be in that group of 90% of people that they were in that whatever, 2.5 million, who didn't buy a watch in that time.
Exactly.
Of course it's going to be a fall. All right, so there's a perfect example.
All right, let me. You know what? Here's how I really see it. This is Karaminder raw, okay? here's how I see it. I see it as... the 2.5 million people that they're probably scanning email addresses, I'm going to assume that some sort of spyware or like malice intent or whatever is reading those emails, right? And I'm going to guess that the IQ level of those 2.5 million people who didn't know any better, clicked a link from an email or opened up an attachment that wasn't right, are probably not the same people who have who are going to be first adopters or early adopters of an Apple Watch. Do you guys track what I'm saying here?
So wait, are you saying you don't think that this company pays people to have access to their email and that they maliciously add themselves?
I wouldn't put it past them with their current behavior practices as a business. Would you?
Okay. I mean, that's definitely thinking something about a company without knowing it. However,
yeah, I went full conspiracy theory, but it makes the most sense.
Right.
To me.
Mm-hmm. You just went full conspiracy. Even if, let's say, that people did agree to do this, who knows what the demographic is? That's, I think, the takeaway from what you're saying. That demographic could be anyone, and that demographic could very possibly be people who would have no interest in Apple product. So I'm going to go ahead and take your full conspiracy and bring it down a little, and it still makes a little bit of sense.
Yes. Certainly right. David, you got to say anything about anything more to say about that, David?
No, you've pretty much covered everything I was going to chime in on. I didn't even get a chance to. This was fantastic.
That's when you're supposed to just start talking and interrupt us and we stop. Caraminder. Haven't you ever been on a radio
show
before?
Well, not with Caraminder. It's kind of hard to talk over when he gets into the impressions. You just want to let it roll and see where he's going to go with it.
Did I already do something?
I know, that's what I said. That's why I didn't interrupt.
So the last, and I'm going to try and keep this flailing train on the rails. The last couple things that we're going to talk about today are surrounding some stuff that David is particularly knowledgeable about, and that's why we wanted to have him on here. And the first thing on this list is, I'm not 100% positive he's knowledgeable on this, but I bet he is. That's what I'm going to do. The first thing.
Yeah, I would like to think he is.
I'm betting.
How about that?
I'm betting.
Fake it till you make it.
And I think it's really important as creative professionals, photographer in David's case and videographer in my case and photographer in Cameron's case, to be able to monetize your travel. And if you want to go somewhere, you can make it happen and really limit the amount of cost on your part in it if you do it right. And I'll give an example of my friend Toby right now, who is in Alaska, who decided he was going to go to Alaska, and he just wanted to go to Alaska. And while there, he is monetizing his travel through various companies that he's reached out to. I think one of them is now Avis. I think he managed
That's
to get
incredible.
Avis involved on it and like stuff like that. Like, you just have to go balls to the wall and attempt to get everything you possibly can going before and during and after while you're shooting to sell product. And your product being your photos or video while you're out there. Do you have any insight into this, David? Is this
As a matter of fact,
do?
I too am going to Alaska. Now this trip...
Guys, I'm not going to Alaska.
I'm sorry.
F you guys.
Now this trip was something that's been planned now for well over a year for myself. And it kind of came up again through the topic we'll go on to next about meeting people and maintaining connections. But it's kind of an aftermarket thing with Alaskan Airlines where through friend of a friend who works with the company, I was asked about shooting some time-lapse and Star Trail stuff. And that's how the whole idea of doing this trip came about, which is why I'm now going up to the Adak Islands for a week and then possibly weather permitting through Denali. And after prepping for this trip and getting everything ready for this trip and speaking with other people that I met in the industry, now I've got some software companies in behind me, some gear companies in behind me who are either paying for some of the cost of this trip or providing equipment and gear and lodgings for this trip. On the flip side, that I turn around and produce content for them, which.
Yeah, that's not uncommon because strangely enough, I'm also going to Alaska and I'm doing the exact same thing. So I got a gig there to do a project. And because I knew I was going, I told them to not send me back immediately after. Just schedule my plane back like 5 or 6 days more, which gives me enough time to go shoot some more. And I also have come up with some relationships that I have gear related that I'm going to produce content while I'm up there and work with Toby while I'm up there because he and I, he's gotten more into video since then, thanks to influence from me. And we're going to work together to produce more content to basically, I got my trip paid for and then I'm going to make even more money through other people while I'm there. And that, I think, is like the holy grail of possibilities. But if you decide that you have a location in mind where you want to go, there's
got to be a way
to make money.
Now, the flip side of this is you have to have at least something behind you to prove that you can produce that content. Yeah. Yeah. If you're Joe Nobody and
you
call up, you know, Ferrari saying, hey, I'm going to take this trip to Italy. You should give me a car. You know, no. Nobody's going to do this. But if you're a professional race car driver and you've won a couple championships and you call up a company like that and say, hey, I'm going to be in your neighborhood. Can we do something together? They're pretty likely. Yeah, exactly. So, you know your market, know what you're capable of doing. And if you're confident in that ability, you have something to show for it, then pick up the phone, get on the email and reach out to these companies that you're affiliated with or that you use. Yeah. Yeah.
Or even if you're not affiliated, like, just try. Yeah. All they can do is either ignore you or say no. Yeah. And I actually like it when they say no, because it at least means they read it. Mm-hmm. Someone else we can look to who did something just because he loved it and turned around and made it into mm-hmm. money is Mike Kelly, a friend of ours, who did it twice. And the first thing he did was Wake Turbulence, which was he just took a bunch of pictures of airplanes and turned them into the big, it's like a time lapse in a photo, shows a bunch of planes taking off from L.A. And he has turned that into a round-the-world project where he's shooting for different airports now. But the most recent one where he turned something he loved to do into something that made him money, which is flying over in a helicopter and taking pictures from the air. And he turned that into an art book and has sold that art book. And he's also, before he even did that, he sold them as artistic prints online through Pure Photo, which is a website that many people go to in the LA area specifically for artwork for their homes. So he turned something that he just wanted mm-hmm. to go do and turned it into a revenue stream. And there are clever ways to do this for basically everyone who is a creative person when they go anywhere that they're anywhere at all. Like he did that in LA where he lives. I mean, I could probably come up with something to do in San Francisco if I really wanted mm-hmm. to. Just don't feel like you're limited on what you can do. Just think about it. Who would buy something like this and what would be the market? And suddenly there's going to be 10 or 15 people who should come yeah. to mind. They're like,
another great
well, these
example
are
of this,
might
which
like
might have slipped
like
your
this.
Mind, is Andrew Griswold. Who, yeah, he was one of the first
oh,
people
he does
who
the Instagram
really
stuff, right?
adopted and loved Instagram and, you know, kind of gave up his DSLR photography business, even though he still does it. He kind of just went full mobile, and he turned that into an entire revenue stream. Now he's getting paid by tourism companies and hotel chains and restaurants and things like that to just do Instagram campaigns for them. Yeah.
Which I honestly did not think mm-hmm. was ever going to pay off, yeah. and it totally has for him, and I like being proven wrong in those cases. Like, that sort of stuff seems to me like it would be really, really yeah. easy for clients to undervalue.
There are even more apps to go along with that line of thinking. I'm not sure if you're familiar with an app called Popular Pays. All over the world, you can pay for various goods and services with your Instagram following. You simply, yeah. So, especially here in Chicago, it's huge. So, like the coffee shops and restaurants and things like that, you walk up to the register and you can pay for certain tiers of your meal or whatever you're purchasing based on your Instagram following. So, if you have 4,000 followers, for instance, you can get up to the top of the Willis Tower to the sky deck for free. Now, how you pay? Yes, you have to.
As
hand,
long as you
open
take a
the
picture
app
up there
and you hand
like,
it over
is
to
that
the
what they're
reseller,
hoping, or
and
you...
there's something I don't know if it's a QR code. I'm not exactly sure how it works because I'll be honest, I haven't really used it myself yet. But I think it's like a QR code that they scan, and then you take that photo from that location. And you say, hey, I'm at the Sky Deck, and it was a great day or whatever, hashtag Popular Pays, and boom, you've got your free entry. There's actually a coffee shop about a mile from my house that, now that I have the time, I'm actually going to go run out and try this thing, because I've been wanting to go there for quite some time, and I just never have the time of day to get there, because they close before 3 p.m.
Kermit has a great look on his face when he heard you say that. He was like, whoa.
Yeah, I need to, like, up my Instagram game, because I didn't know I could use that as currency. So I've been totally missing the boat.
Jeez.
Thanks, guys. I guess it's not a Popular Bay Area thing, Jaren. I'm surprised because we were like the epicenter of always like new emerging tech stuff.
You know, it's very possible.
You're just
it
not
is
popular,
popular
enough
and
on Instagram.
Just out of the
you're not Insta famous.
Yeah. Can you sell your Snapchat following, Jaren? Do they do Snapchat? Do you know?
I still think my Instagram following. Actually, my Twitter following is the biggest. Actually, you're Jaren. Yours the biggest between us all, I think.
Yep, that's right, it is. Doesn't mean they're very active, but they're there.
But they're there.
That would explain a lot if that was the case. I don't know.
At least Instagram does prune their
quarterly
their base. And, you know, what are they just announced that they have a bug where they're going to fix the bug and it actually gave you more followers. So it'll take your follower count back down. And
I'm going from next to nothing to nothing? You. That's great. Okay.
Cool. Ah. Huh.
Yeah, it's really, yeah. From next
yes,
to nothing.
I had 3 followers and now I have 0.
This is true.
So, a moral here is there's ways to monetize basically everything that we as people who make beautiful things that we do. And if you've wanted to go do something, just make it happen. And actually, that's an excellent segue into how do you make mm-hmm. something like this happen? You have to, quote, know somebody. But you don't just, like, you know somebody. There's ways to do it. And when I introduced him, I called him a walking Rolodex. Mm-hmm. And it's because David I'm not even kidding here. When we go to WPPI or PPE or we're at any event together, the man literally knows everyone. It freaks me out that he can see someone walk into a bar, wave and say hello, tell me who he is, get back to our conversation. Three people more walk in. He's like, oh, those, you should meet that guy right there. You should know who he is. He's cool. I want to know how you did that and what your process is, David, for like deciding I needed to do this and how these connections have like paid off. So all of these things I just said, just start talking.
Before he says anything, I'm going to say David is such a nice gentleman, and I think that's going to solve.
I guess that helps.
It's Canadian. It's what we're all about.
Very nice gentleman.
Yeah, sorry.
Say sorry, David.
Oh, there God.
Go. Now he's proper Canadian.
No.
So talk to me about the process you made, like when you decided, like it's kind of important for me, the networking thing,
you know,
like that buzzword, yeah. The Bay Area buzzword.
It's actually,
how do you whore yourself
up? This is one of the things I will credit to my father for doing. At a very young age, my father's an entrepreneur, and one of the earliest lessons he ever taught me was, whether you like somebody or not, always pay attention to who they are and what they do, because you never know when you might need that person in your life. And yeah, it's exactly it.
Oh, that's why you keep me up.
And you know, okay, cool. At the time when I was a kid, I was just thinking, wow, that was a really jerky thing to say, you know, that's not really cool. But then as, you know, I get older and you get into these situations, you lose touch with friends, and then 10 years later you get in touch with a friend, and you find out, oh, they're like a politician now, or they're a doctor now, or they're a lawyer now. And it wasn't, you know, it was like halfway through my college education or maybe a year or two later that I realized, like, it cued back into me that this is what my father was talking about. Like, all these people you meet in your life, stay in touch with them if you can, because you never know what's going to happen. So I didn't really put a lot of effort into it at that point. It wasn't until I was getting pretty frustrated with my career in IT that this information, this kind of, you know, paying attention to people came into play, which is, my whole career is based on just this random connections that I made. I met a guy playing a video game who ended up getting me introduced to people I needed to meet in Hollywood, which turned into me getting my first DSLR, which turned into me working in film and even actually working in Hollywood back in Canada, doing production for Starz and HBO, which got me back into California 5 years later. And now I'm working as a full-time photographer and educator. And it's all just because of, I knew a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy. And, you know, it's not something that's going to be an instant process. It's something you need to put a lot of work into, and you need to, you know, play the long game, I guess is the way to put it. if you're in it for the short
the
payoff, you know, you're going to burn out and you're not going to make things happen. And people are going to know you're in it for short-term gain, and it's, you know, going to turn against you in the end. But I don't know how I manage to retain the information about the people that I meet, but one of the things I do is every time I get a business card, I make sure to take a photo of it. I import it into my contact list. I add a note to where. I used Evernote Hello until they stopped supporting it. Now
David.
They have Scannable is their new app. It's not as good. But it does work. I'm doing it manually. So what I'll do is I'll take all these business cards and I put them into an Excel spreadsheet, and, you know, where I met them, how I met them, what their job is. I'll put links to their websites, to the social media and things of that nature. And I'll try to keep track. Yeah.
Sounds like a great how to. Like David's Photo Business 101 workshop. Yo.
You know what that does actually sound like is that is what companies hire PR firms to do for them for journalists. And like, I thought this was really weird the first time I was ever actually legitimately considered a journalist, but I like walked into a meeting I had with someone and they had this like, you know, if you watch any movie, there's always a folio on someone. They've got like a dossier on who they are and what they, and there's like a picture of them and like their height, weight, and they had something like that for me, and it freaked me out. Like, yeah, Cameron is holding up a dossier that has nothing in it, but it would be like this, and my picture was in it, and weird, it's from Google. Cameron just showed us his. He's got one that
I've
Google
got
has.
Dossier
on him.
That Google
he googles
has on
himself
me.
Every night and prints it
that's
out.
Weird.
That's what that is.
Hey, but you bet I like him a lot.
Oh God. Anyway, like they do that. They find this information on a journalist. What they'll do is they'll get all their information, what they look like, what they specialize in, and what they have written about regarding a company in the past. And that basically sounds like what you do, David.
Yeah.
But tailored specifically to you, which sounds like
it can be. And
a full-time
I'll be
job
honest
itself,
about it.
Almost.
I typically do that stuff while I'm queuing up something on Netflix. So I'll queue on an episode of, you know, some television show that I'm or a tutorial that I'm wanting to watch but not pay 100% attention to, and I'll just start inputting all that stuff while I'm watching TV or listening to music. So I'm and to this fact,
also genius.
You know, I still have a pile of, of cards here that I need to put in and get scanned, so, you know.
That's funny. I'm going to go ahead and say this because I love her. Hi, Mikkel. Mikkel Page. So she's a wedding photographer.
Speaking of this topic.
What's funny, really funny, that you just brought that up is that Mikkel, I found to be the female version of Dave when we met her last year. We met her at WPPI, and she made it like her mission to find out and know everybody.
The key is, well, speaking of Mikkel, she was not afraid. I remember when I met her, I was wearing my Flurn t-shirt. And she just walked right up to me. She's like, "Oh my God, Flurn, you work with Aaron. What do you do? I need to know you."
Yeah, that sounds like something you would do, but, you know.
Well, it's pretty much it. And the key to this is to just be confident in what you can do and don't be afraid to say hi, because the worst that somebody can ever say to you is, "I'm sorry, I'm really busy. Come back 10 minutes from now."
Yeah, and I also think being very comfortable with who you are as well, not being worried like, "Oh, I'm just a photographer who shoots miniatures of Legos and little die-cast."
I mean, you're making that like that as the example, but that has a legitimate use, and somebody would absolutely love that. Like the stuff blows up.
And so it's just being unafraid and just being not necessarily unapologetic about who you are, but just being comfortable in your own skin. That this is who you are.
Well,
this is what you do. And if somebody like, you know, poo-poos on you, like, don't give them any energy or any of your time. Just focus on people who do like you.
Yeah,
that's why I kick it with you guys.
My current position with an education company that I have right now, I don't know whether we can say these things in these podcasts or no, or we should say these things in these podcasts.
It is up to you, my friend.
Yeah. Well, I work with a company called Flurn. And
Flurn.com.
Flurn.com, yes. And I got that job because... Phlearn.
.com.
No, years and years ago, I was working with the ASMP out in California, and I came across Aaron's YouTube channel before it was Flurn. And I just thought he was a brilliant educator, and I called him up and asked him if he would come out to do a workshop. And fast forward to a couple weeks later of me calling and getting sponsors for that, Aaron called me up and he said, "You know, what the hell are you doing?" It's like, "I'm getting these calls from Adobe and Wacom now. Like, I've been trying to get a hold of them for months and months, and they never return my calls. And 2 days after I speak with you, they're calling me." He's like, "Well, you know, how'd you do it?" I just said, "Well, I just picked up the phone and I told them who you were and what I was doing and said that we all need to work together." And 5 minutes later, Aaron offered me a job.
Yeah. Took him whole 5 minutes? I'm disappointed.
Yeah, pretty much. He's like, "Wow, that's crazy. Do you want a job?"
So that's actually a really good thing to bring up. Even if, well, let's say you're not 100% confident in your photography, but you love doing it. If you can make an effort to know people in this industry and find your place in, like, being that friendly guy that everyone just, you know, understands, takes their word for things. Like, like you, David, for example, they knew who you were, that you were working with ASMP. They understood the relationship there. It didn't matter if you personally were a good photographer. You are, but it didn't matter that you were. You were able to create a connection for somebody else, and that got you a job. That can happen for just about anyone, because the number of people who don't act on their ability to get to know people is really, like, there's a lot of them out there. The people who are like you, David, there are very few of them. That makes you incredibly employable. And so if people want to work in this industry but maybe aren't 100%, you know, satisfied with where they are photographically, but they want to be involved, this is a great way to do it. You can work on your photography while you're working for other people, getting them connected to the right folks. There's work out there for you.
There's a plethora of companies in this industry that are always looking for talented people. You know, whether or not you are a great photographer or videographer, but as you know the industry, and they want people with that.
That is hugely helpful.
So there, I want to say that, you know, the emphasis of what we're saying, at least what, you know, bringing David on and also talking about the adventure photographer I was just talking about as well, Mr. Chin. I think Jimmy Chin. That, you know, photography is a very large pie. And everyone can get their own slice.
Yeah.
Very, very large pie. And so don't feel intimidated that it's have to be or copy this sense of style. You know, really just try and be you and bring yourself into your work. And that'll bring you far more success than I believe anything else will. That'll get you so much further.
Genuineness.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Dave, for that. That was That was good. I think I hope people listen to you because I think the reason you are successful is because for years you have dedicated yourself to knowing people, remembering people, and knowing what other people are good at. And that is, I think, paying off for you now more than it ever has. And I'm really happy for you.
Yeah, someday I'm going to pull the trigger and actually start an agency. I keep thinking about it. I keep talking about it. But one day soon, I'm.
Yeah,
gonna
you
do
have
it.
All the knowledge to do it, yeah. And all
do
the
it.
Connections. Like, I mean,
do it
well,
now.
It's one of the things I love doing as well. Is, you know, one of the benefits of going to these trade shows and meeting all these people, and you learn about what they're passionate about, and then you meet a company that's looking for somebody that's passionate about that particular thing. And you're like, oh, I know exactly who you need to meet.
Yeah, and that sort of thing that you just described right there, mm-hmm. I think, is really, really lacking in this industry because you'll yeah. find yeah. that all of these companies are looking at the exact same people, and there are a lot of other folks out there that may be actually more talented than them, especially in specific fields that these companies yeah. should be going to but aren't because they don't know anybody else. You could be that guy mm-hmm. that could say, well, actually, rather than such and such, who all the six of these other companies are using, I recommend this person because they're a better fit for you. Mm-hmm.
yeah
and I think David I guess me and David met, like, I guess we found pictures that we were at the same party but didn't know each other. This was the I think I want to say this was the F-Stoppers party during Photo Plus.
It was New York. At Peter Hurley's old studio.
Yeah, and
I
we're
think.
Like, you were there too? Yeah. I was there too. And then we looked back at the photos like, yes, we were both there, but just didn't know each other. And then we met
we
in
actually
Vegas
had
a few
pictures
months after.
Together. We were in the same photo.
We were in the same
and
photo.
And we did not even realize. We had like two, you, I was on the left and you were on the right of like a big group photo.
Yeah, and like, why? Who and then this like guy I remember that you knew a lot of people and I knew a lot of people, but then we didn't know each other.
Yeah,
and that we were connectors. I always call it connectors, probably some because of some like book I read. Like I think never.
We were literally connected through 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, pretty much. Like we knew everyone yeah. around us except for each other. Like who yeah. are you? Who are you? Like everyone knows who I am. Everyone knows who I am too. And like okay then. So hi, how you doing?
I don't know if you guys know this, but Caraminder's kind of a big deal.
Well, I think actually both of you are quite a big deal. So.
Jan, you're not so
my
bad.
Mom says I'm cool, so it's yeah. got to be.
David, what?
Yeah, your mom said that too.
What's your Instagram / Twitter? What are your handles?
All of my social media is exactly the same.
Good, good for you. I like
David,
that, David.
Yeah, David J. Crewe, C-R-E-W-E.
Yeah, he got an extra E at the end.
I got the old Scottish spelling. So
well, the reason I ask is because we are encouraging our listeners to go ahead and follow you, mm-hmm. check you out. Your Instagram and your Twitters are sure to be full of valuable information. But on that note, guys, thank you for joining us. If you've got any comments or questions, or if you'd like to know anything about David, we can ask him later and maybe he'll come back on. Or if you have any questions for us or people you'd like us to talk to or subjects you'd like us to cover, let us know on Twitter at Rewrap Podcast and at resourcemagonline.com. You can also email us at rewrap@resourcemagonline.com. Did you know also that you could go to our website very quickly and easily with resource.photography? That's new. We did that. And also resource.travel.
I did
yeah,
not know that.
That's
I
cool,
feel,
right?
I feel like a better person it's, for knowing
isn't
that
much
now.
Easier to remember than resourcemagonline.com? It's resource.photography. If you like what you heard, please rate us on iTunes. We would really like those ratings. Subscribe.
Yeah, just one click. You just got to hit one click. 5 stars. That's it. You don't have to say anything or type anything. Just one click.
I'm a subscriber.
You should subscribe, like David, and send us some Twitter love. Tell your friends to give us a listen. We would really appreciate it. Everyone, I'm at Jaron Schneider. He's at Caraminder. He's at David J. Crewe. And this has been the Rewrap Podcast. We will see you all here next week.